This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit villageofbedfordpark.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03 Wednesday afternoon, August 19th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour is sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. After Wall Street's big run, a portfolio checkup may be long overdue. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But first, there are a host of common grocery shopping habits that are quietly draining budgets, from impulse buying and bulk mistakes to wasted memberships. Joining us to discuss is Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. And what are some things that I can do and you can do and we all can do to tighten up our grocery shopping game the next time we go to Mariano's?
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me. Yes, there's many things we can do, whether you go to Mariano's or Costco or Sam's Club or Jewel. You know, there are many things we can do. And one of them is, which a lot of people I know do, is don't drive to multiple stores in one single trip. I mean, if you go to Costco for bulk, but you go to Jewel for everyday things, then, you know, make sure you go for Costco maybe once a month or once every 6 weeks or something like that, because you've got all the bulk items, and then just shop at, you know, whatever your favorite store is after that. And the other things are like not using a cashback card. For one, you should use credit cards, because you can get the cashback from them and you can get other rewards from them, which you can't get from, obviously, you know, paying cash or on a debit card. But what you want to make sure you do is pay that balance off right away, or else then you're stuck with, you know, interest rates and interest rate fees, and those are like $29-30 a piece. Some other things I have a bad habit of doing is, like, I shop with a list, and you should always shop with a list, but I have a list of things I know I'm out of, but then I see a sale on something like, say, green beans or fruits that I want, and I think, oh, okay, I'll make those. I don't have any idea what I'm going to use them for, but hey, it's a sale. And then, you know, they can end up going bad. So you want to be careful of those kinds of things too. The other things, speaking of buying in bulk, if you buy in bulk, make sure you check the expiration dates on these things, because, you know, you get so much of it. If you go to Costco or Sam's Club, you get so much of it, and you may not get through it in enough time before it expires. And, you know, or you do what my brother and I used to do, and that's we used to go to Costco together, and with a list, and then we would split everything up so that we're buying it in bulk, but he gets half and I get half. And there are other things too that you can do. You don't pay, speaking of Costco and Sam's Club and such, don't pay for two memberships or more than one membership, to say, because you can get a lot of the same things at either store at reduced prices, but you're paying, the membership fees are pretty expensive. They're all $100 to $130 a year, and so you might not be recouping that if you're splitting up your trips and that kind of thing.
I also like shopping for the person you want to be instead of the person you are, because there are so many people who are saying to themselves, well, I found this really great recipe online and I'm going to get really into X, Y, and Z. And the next thing you know, ingredients X, Y, and Z are stinking up your refrigerator and you wasted a bunch of money on them.
That's exactly right. Especially if you're thinking you're going to change your eating habits, like, oh, I'm going to really try to eat better now. So you stock up on a bunch of Greek yogurt that you really don't get all the way through. So that's the kind of things you need to be careful with as well. You know, one of the things too is when you're buying things and you don't have a budget or a list, you can end up with, you know, 8 bottles of ketchup or cans of garbanzo beans or something like that, because you're not paying close enough attention. And, you know, you can combat that easily too by doing what my sister does. She once a month, about every 6 weeks or so, she does what she calls a clear the cabinets in the fridge. And she just goes through and sees what she has and then plans her meals around what's there. And that, you know, obviously cleans out stuff, but it also gives her good inventory on what she has, because I don't know if everyone is constantly knowing exactly what they have.
Jennifer Waters, Chicago-based business reporter. Yeah, we're in the midst of a freezer clean-out week ourselves.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Stocks have flown high this year. The S&P 500 recently hitting records, gaining roughly 13%, making now the right time to rebalance and protect those gains. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. If you're a savvy investor or any old investor, you're up on the year. That's the kind of rate of return equities have been delivering in 2026. But what can you do now to lock in those gains?
Well, first off, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. There's a lot of gains out there, not just this year, right? Since like 2019, S&P is up almost 150% over that time frame, almost doubled the last 3 years alone. So, Rob, that's the big question. And, you know, the easiest way is kind of what we're talking about, rebalancing. Let's keep this real high level and simple. Rebalancing is like if you have $100 and the market goes up, stock market goes a whole bunch, bonds don't do as well. You say, okay, in 6 months, I'm going to go back to my 60% in stocks and 40% in bonds or whatever that particular thing is. There's an old saying, plans are useless, but planning is everything. President Eisenhower. I think right now it makes sense to take some of these huge stock gain returns we've had and kind of go into some other areas. Bonds haven't done that well. Maybe some commodities, maybe some other things, but have a plan, continue to do it. That way you're kind of, you know, booking some of the profits, so to speak, but you're still have upside, because I don't think this bull market's over.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned this, because a friend of mine, he and I were having this conversation on Saturday. Ryan, this is what dads in their 40s talk about now on Saturday night, is your asset allocation. And he was talking about he felt he was a little too overexposed in AI and wanted to deploy those gains elsewhere. But, you know, how can you do it in a way that you know what you're doing?
Well, isn't it funny when you get older, though, the boring stuff we talk about, and you used to talk about fun stuff, but I guess it is what it is. And it's a good thing to talk about, because the market's gone up a lot. You know, obviously the easiest answer is someone can work with a financial advisor. I mean, that's kind of one of the easiest ways. But the other way, you know, there are some robo-advisors you can listen to. You can get in, like, investment groups with friends, like you're talking about. Have these plans in place. Continue to follow them. And, again, just, you know, pay attention to it. You know, you say, listen, no matter what happens, let's say the end of June 31st, or the end of this year, December 31st, I'm going to take my portfolio. I'm going to put, you know, if I'm 70% equities, but my benchmark is to be about 65%, because you had a great run, what we've seen. Just follow that process and continue to do what you're telling yourself. But honestly, kind of a cheat code, work a financial advisor. That way they do it for you, and you make sure it happens.
And then once again, this is risk management at the end of the day. Yep. This is not market timing.
Well, and that's a great point. You know, leave market timing for the algorithms, for the hedge funds. Listen, let them go do that. As investors, time is our biggest advantage. Listen, I call this the rule of Joe Montana. Every 16 years, remember he was number 16, the stock market has never been lower. Now, listen, we can find years here and there that it's lower. Over the long run, stocks usually do well. So you want to make sure you take those gains and kind of book some of those gains along the way. And real quickly, I know we're probably near the end. I mean, bonds have not done well. Interest rates, I'm sure you've talked about, are higher. Everybody feels it. Everybody sees the 30-year yield, the highest it's been since 2007. Real simple. Bonds or yields go up. Bonds don't do as well. But you know what? Bonds are really beaten up. So I think there could be some opportunity here for someone who's had great stock gains, book some of that, look at bonds, hold bonds for a couple of years, and you'll probably do pretty well with a diversified portfolio, Rob.
And then if you're listening right now and maybe you're just all of your investments are in a target date retirement fund, yeah, or maybe just in a couple of S&P index funds, do you have to do this rebalancing dance, or is it done for you?
No, it's done for you. That's a great point. These target funds are amazing. So much flows go into it. Literally, with my children, I've got literally a daughter who started at Penn State this week. So I've got kids who are in college. I use these target dated funds because they do that for you, and it does make life a lot easier. Just kind of set it and forget it. I know this sounds boring. Wait a decade or two, and you're going to thank yourself later.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist, the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Amazon's delivery drones are preparing for their biggest takeoff yet.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Amazon is dramatically expanding its drone delivery ambitions, now targeting nearly 500 communities across the country, including in the Chicago area. Let's bring in Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. Paul, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Now, there was a, let's call it a lack of pilot program for drone delivery in the Chicago area, specifically in the south suburbs, not too long ago. And it seems like that program was a success.
Yeah, and and not only was it a success, it spurred Amazon, as you said a moment ago, to expand its ambitions. They call it Prime Air. And basically, it is entirely drone delivery of packages that are suitable for, wait for it, a drop of 10 feet. In other words, the way this stuff works, down to how the package gets from Amazon to you, is everybody talks about the last mile, right? The biggest challenge of delivering packages is not getting it from distribution centers or from manufacturers. It's really getting it to your house, because there are so many neighborhoods, obviously, and so many, including in Chicago, of course. Well, Amazon and Prime Air specifically have decided that, including in Chicago, that the way to deliver that last mile is actually to focus on the last 10 feet. So a drone will arrive and drop a package that's suitable for dropping. Obviously, they're still working on cartons of eggs, I'm sure, but suitable for dropping in your backyard, in your front yard, wherever it is possible for that drone to maneuver. So in a nutshell, they're aiming for roughly 500 cities and 1 million deliveries this year.
And these are small items, as you point out, that could survive a drop of 10 feet. And these are the little things that could potentially free up those Amazon delivery drivers to deliver the larger things, larger items, heavier items, and the little stuff was more or less a waste of their time.
That's correct. It's a loss leader. Exactly right. Like, for example, yesterday, for example, I need my car key, the battery is getting low. I needed the battery. I was stuck working, could not get out to a local retailer to get those flat little batteries for the car key. And I ordered it and it came same day. But to your point, that required, coordination of extraordinary levels. And finally, a truck to deliver that tiny little package. To this point, if you drop, for example, a package of very flat batteries by Duracell or some other maker, it's not going to get damaged in that 10-foot drop. So what Amazon is doing is not only getting rid of a lot of the logistical hassle of that last mile of those trucks, the cost, gasoline prices obviously are high, unless it's electric vehicles, and then, of course, they're trying to figure out how to maneuver through those neighborhoods. Drones solve a lot of that, and that 10-foot drop is, in fact, suitable for a huge percentage, they estimate about 35% to 40% of those deliveries are suitable to be dropped 10 feet.
Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. The Noon Business Hour continues, sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Markets are higher today for the first time this week. Joining us with the latest in what's moving Wall Street is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Wealth. Art, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. And is this rally, if you want to call it that, is it entirely tied to a little bit of relief in the bond market?
Yeah, it certainly feels like that, Rob. The Treasury Department and Scott Bessent came out today and talked about increasing the size of a buyback program they have. And essentially what that means is the Treasury can go in the open market and buy back securities. They're going to target the 10 to 30-year range and to take some of those securities out of the hands of the public and actually go reinstate a similar amount on the shorter end of the curve. So what essentially that does is it's a bit of an operation twist or it's yield curve control. It seems to be working today. We're down about 6 basis points on the 10 and the 30-year in terms of rates, and those rates had blown out quite a bit over the course of the last 2 weeks. So I think the market is celebrating that a little bit, and there's not much else to talk about on a quiet dog days of summer. Low volumes. We've seen low volumes over the course of the last couple of days, and besides that, there's a big story out of Merck and Moderna.
What has been going on, though, with the 10 and 30-year yield? What are some of the factors that have been driving the bond market? Because there are obviously concerns about inflation and maybe the more macroeconomic concerns about government debt and the ability to service that debt and deficits. But what else is going on?
Yeah, all of that is true, and that typically is what affects the yield curve and the Treasury yields. But I would offer into there, we've also seen a lot of investment-grade issuance this year. So there is some crowding out of Treasuries when you have companies with the size of Microsoft and NVIDIA in the investment-grade issuance business. So we've seen about $138 billion of investment-grade issuance to help fund some of that CapEx for artificial intelligence and large language models. So I think you've got a crowding out effect as well, but there's also momentum, right? So when you start to see the long end falter a bit for those macro reasons that you discussed, the bond vigilantes, tend to, step on the gas on that. And I think what Scott Bessent was trying to do is at least slow that down and moderate the pace at which we've been seeing some lack of buyers at the long end of the curve.
What's interesting is that this lends more credence to a piece that was in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago that says that AI isn't going to transform the economy. It's already happened, and you're seeing it in ways both large and small. One is just the wealth effect for a lot of people who watch their portfolios multiply on a double-digit basis just based on the run-up driven by AI. The amount of people who the construction companies that are just busy as all get out just because of building out data centers. And now we're seeing its impact on the bond market because they need to find they're issuing, as you point out, all of this debt to scale up the hyperscalers.
Yeah, all of that is true. And I think you highlighted a lot of the important points. The industrials, one of the best performing sectors in the S&P 500 this year, is largely about data center build-out. And certainly energy is a big input to the data center. And so obviously the energy sector is up for a lot of reasons, but that's a piece of it. But if you're able to make energy and power like GE Vernova, you're obviously seeing a doubling in your stock value because, all of these data centers that are being planned have to come with the power that they're going to use to run those. So all of that's true. But at the other end of it, this is the first time we've seen this massive outflows of debt coming from investment-grade companies, and I think that's crowding out a lot of things, including treasuries on the long end.
We do have a number of consumer-facing companies with their second-quarter earnings statements this week. We saw Home Depot earlier this week. What are they telling us?
Well, interestingly, the foot traffic has been pretty good across the board. Home Depot had a great report. They're more sort of aligned with the smaller mid-size professional. Lowe's had a great report, but they're more consumer facing. So, if you and I are putting a new patio in or something along those lines in a renovation, that's probably a Lowe's job for us. But the biggest surprise of the bunch, I think, is Target, which is, finally after 4 years, gaining some traction. Foot traffic has improved. Their product mix has improved. The stock is finally getting, getting some buyers and some interest, and they gave some great guidance. But my favorite of the bunch has been TJX, because the off-pricers in this environment with a choiceful consumer, it's still, one of the leaders of the pack. So across the board, I would tell you that while we're concerned about the consumer, we always are, especially with gasoline prices where they are, the consumer's still out there and was pretty rigorous in the back to school and likely will be during holiday season.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Wealth in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, if you want to be wealthy, it may be time to stop trying to look wealthy.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Trying to look rich could actually be keeping people from becoming rich with status spending and trying to keep up with the Joneses. Oh, those nefarious Joneses quietly destroying your wealth. We welcome in Sandy Brager, Chief Client Officer of Experient in San Francisco. Sandy, thank you for joining us today. And the one thing I came to realize shortly after moving to suburbia, and I feel like a lot of other people reach that conclusion as well, and that is, no matter how old you are and how far you are removed from graduation day, in many ways, Sandy, high school never ends when it comes to cliques and drama and trying to impress, and that could really put a cramp on your bottom line.
That is true, Rob. The most expensive purchases we make are often the ones that are meant to allow us to keep up with someone else's lifestyle. So we really caution our clients who are corporate executives, family business owners, and entrepreneurs away from that. But that said, lifestyle inflation is normal. Costs do go up. We all know that. We've been living through the last few years of high inflation. The challenge is that when our earnings go higher, and there's peer pressure and social media and convenience, all of that can lead to higher spending that it feels like we deserve without our stopping to think about it. And the caution here is not letting those recurring expenses rise so quickly that it crowds out savings, flexibility, and other future choices.
And in some ways, Sandy, this feels like this can be a conversation you have with a therapist almost as much as you have with a financial planner, or maybe a financial planner who has both skills, because you say that and in a vacuum, it makes a lot of sense. But when you are in social situations, when you're dealing with your kids, friends, parents, and they make a lot more money than you do, and they take much more expensive vacations and have fabulous parties in their backyard, that pressure is very real. And it's almost like you have to find something to hold on to bring you back to earth and have confidence in yourself.
That's right. And we recommend starting with a vision and getting very, very clear on that vision and having it led by both your values and your goals. So what are the things that are most important to you? Not what other people are expecting of you or what you'd like to maybe see, but like what's really most important to you? Is it security? Is it time with your family, travel, good health, career flexibility, philanthropy, a home, retirement? There are so many different things that might matter to us, but really get clear on what matters most to you. And once you have that list, get it out of your head. Write it down on a piece of paper, put a vision board together, or find some other method for making that vision feel and look and even taste tangible to you. Having a very clear vision like that can be a helpful filter as you make spending decisions, especially in those high pressure situations you were just describing, Rob.
What are some status-seeking spending decisions that could ultimately harm your family's finances and make those dreams less attainable?
Yeah, so if you find that you're spending more on money now at the consequence of saving and investing that money for other goals that are more important to you in your future, that is the big risk. Right, it's just overspending, and that happens when you're not really paying attention. Spending's habitual. When we have those pressure situations, like, oh yeah, well, what could this extra night out really matter in the long run? And chances are that extra night out isn't going to make a big deal. But if it's followed by spending more money on a car, spending more money on a home, spending more money on more frequent vacations, then it can really snowball and add up. So you want to keep that vision that we talked about in mind, and you want to come up with a spending plan that you check in on from time to time to make sure that the spending is reflecting your plan. And the goal isn't necessarily to spend as little as possible. The goal is to spend on purpose.
And lastly, there is a big difference between income and net worth. And you explain that difference for us.
Yeah, so net worth is simply a statement that shows all of your assets, the things that you own that have value, and your liabilities, what you owe to somebody else, whether it's a bank, a person, a government. So importantly, your net worth is not a mirror of who you are as a person navigating this world. Your net worth is simply what you own and what you owe. Spending and income are very different. That's the money that's coming in your pocket and money that's leaving out of your pocket. To the extent that you're bringing in more earnings than you're spending, then you're allowing for savings, which increases your net worth. And if you're investing that savings, that can help grow your net worth over time. And again, the goal isn't to have the biggest net worth. The goal is to make sure that your net worth is allowing you to spend not only today in on things that are most important to you and experiences that are most important to you, but on those things that will also be important to you down the road in your future.
Sandy Brager, Chief Client Officer, Experient in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
For first-time homebuyers, achieving the American dream can feel overwhelming, but knowing where to start can make all the difference. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. And this is the number one complaint people have about the economy, especially if you're in the housing market, is people saying, I don't think I could buy a home even if one became available.
Yeah, we're hearing the same thing too, Rob. And really, you know, we used to think of the starter home as, hey, I'm going to buy this house to give me some financial breathing room. I'm going to stay here 3-5 years or so, you know, kind of save some money up so I can go to the next home. And really, I think what's becoming confusing here is people are going about that process, but they're not kind of setting themselves up on the front side to really support that starter home. And I think that's given them the anxiety that they're feeling.
What are some things you can do to reduce that anxiety and also strike when the timing is right?
Yeah, I think you really have to start with a budget, and you got to kind of understand what that budget is. And the budget or that target price is not what the lender is going to approve. And I'm going to tell you too, one of those processes is to get pre-approved, but that's not the only thing you want to focus on. You want to make sure that you've got some ability, that you're not house poor. You want to be able to save some money. As I talked earlier, it gives you this financial breathing room. So you don't want to spend all your money on that starter home. You want to have some money that you're going to be able to save and put into reserve so that you can, eventually move into that next level home, that next tier of house.
And then when it comes to finding a real estate agent, are there some people who just aren't built for this particular housing market or may not be good at meeting the needs of first-time home buyers?
Yeah, and you're putting me on the spot, aren't you? Thanks for that. I appreciate that.
No, I think you're great, Drew. You're our first-time home buyer expert.
Yes, I am. Thank you. So the realtor's job is to set you up and give you these things, and also this knowledge of, are you pre-approved? Have you scoped out your area? Do you have your budget? And then their job and their responsibility is to show you homes within those parameters. So by the time you get to them, they're in the place of saying, all right, well, I'm just fulfilling your need because you've done all that front side work. So you can take that whole worry out of whether they're qualified or not by bringing to them what you want, and you'll tell if they're qualified or not based on what they're showing you.
Conversely, a lot of people in the first-time home buyer pool, they go to Reddit, they go to ChatGPT, they go to other online communities for advice, and sometimes that advice is not necessarily healthy, nor does it give them the proper perspective.
That's true, because we've talked to a lot of people, by the bones, not the finishes, because you can change those things. If the house is, the foundation is breaking down, the roof needs to be replaced, there's issues like that, those are substantially bigger problems and bigger issues. Don't waive your inspection right. I mean, if you're going to do anything, do not waive your inspection right, because that's, especially on a starter home, let the inspector know. You want to know of the things that are going to be some of the small fixes, and then they're going to alert you to some of the bigger ones. And then you can make the decision on your own what you want to do.
Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago.